Epilogue. After your last breath. In the book, I share a picture, one of my favorite pictures from my childhood. It's of my dad, my mom, my oldest brother, Bobby Jean, my middle brother, Sammy Lee, and myself. And I was probably about one year old or so. And I've always loved the picture and many times have wondered what life would have been like if the family had stayed together. My parents divorced when I was 1 year old, probably not too long after the picture was taken. But regardless of the cards that we are dealt, we are the ones who control our destiny, and we can rise up and make for brighter days for all those around us. A little story about my dad that he found out on his 76th birthday, April 30th, 2013, that he had small cell lung cancer. The doctors thought they could treat it with relative ease and that he'd have no long-lasting effects of the disease. He hadn't smoked in over 30 years and was still working full-time. Up to that point, he had been healthy and could do anything he wanted to do. He loved to fish, camp, and play golf. After 3 months of treatment and the loss of 30 pounds, we got the news that things didn't look so good. In week 4 of his last month, we had to move him from the hospital into hospice care. His cancer had quickly advanced. Despite aggressive treatment, he struggled just to breathe. One lung had filled up completely with fluid, and the other was about half full. My wife, Melanie, my dad's sister, Betty Terry, and her husband, Sam, and my stepmother, Betty Lou, and I took turns around the clock to make sure his last days were comfortable and that he was never alone. Several family members made the trip to Wichita Falls, Texas to see him one last time. My sons, Jared and Travis, came to visit and pray with Dad. My cousin, Rick Terry, also came to see him and reminisce about the good old days. The first couple of days in hospice were pretty good. Dad loved the vanilla frosty from Wendy's, and Melanie made the run to get him one on a Tuesday. However, by day 4, Thursday, he had slipped into a coma and didn't wake up again. A couple of days later, on a Saturday morning around noon, an amazing thing happened. My sister had returned to their house to get some sleep, and Betty Lou came to the hospice room to spend the day with Dad. He suddenly moved. I was sitting near the foot of the bed where I could see him. Betty Lou was sitting beside him, holding his hand and talking with me. I thought I saw him close his mouth as if he were going to say something. I didn't say anything until he did it again. It was at that moment I said to Betty Lou, "I think he wants a kiss." So she stood up and started lightly kissing him, holding his head and talking to him. I stood up beside him, and at that moment, his breathing slowed, and within a few moments, he took his last breath. It was very peaceful, but also incredibly impactful. Moments later, Melanie returned to the room and realized what had taken place. We shared with her what had happened in those final moments, and we contacted Dad's sister, Betty, and her husband, Sam. And we all gathered around him and said our final goodbyes. On August 24th, 2013, almost 4 months to the day from when he found out he had cancer, he was gone. A little story about my mom. Then, only 7 months later, in March of 2014, my mom found out just a few months before her 76th birthday that she had a growth developing in one of her lungs. She had retired from work and was in declining health during this time. We were just a couple of weeks away from moving her into assisted living and had just hired a nurse to stop by every day. The nurse was to make sure she was up, had taken her medication, and was eating. On September 29th, 2014, the first morning the nurse came by to check on her, she couldn't get Mom to answer the door. She called us at our home in Scottsdale, Arizona, and we talked her through where she could find a key. Sadly, sometime during the night, Mom had gotten out of bed and had fallen. She had seriously injured herself and wasn't able to get up. She was breathing, but not doing well. My wife, Melanie, was already in Oklahoma, moving my stepmother, Betty Lou, to Clinton from Wichita Falls, Texas. So I hopped on a plane and flew to Oklahoma City to meet my brother, Bob, and Melanie at the hospital. Mom was fairly alert and doing much better by the time I got there. She knew all of us and could talk in brief answers. But until the swelling went down and further tests could be run, it was too early to know how she was doing. We decided to take shifts at the hospital since she was in intensive care unit. Ironically, Mom had been in the hospital that same day, 58 years earlier, giving birth to my brother, Bob, on September 30th, 1956. Wednesday, October 1st, 2014 was a day that changed my life forever. As Melanie and I sat with Mom that afternoon, she asked, "Am I dying?" We looked at each other with so many thoughts in our heads, we didn't know how to answer that question. How much information is too much? How much could she handle at that moment? Telling her about her injuries, we said that we hoped not, and we assured her that we'd be there to hold her hand if she was. She also talked about her mom and sister that afternoon, both of whom had passed away many years earlier. When we showed her a picture of her brother and asked if she knew who it was, she smiled and said, "My brother." Charles, who I shared about in Rule 2, is my mom's baby brother. She helped raise him, and she knew he loved her very much. We also talked about Sam, my brother, who passed away in 2004. She knew what was about to happen. She told Melanie that she was scared. So we read through the 23rd Psalm together as we held her hands. That comforted her. A calm peace took over at that moment, an acceptance of what she knew was ahead. Bob came in that evening to take over the night shift, and Melanie and I had left to go eat some dinner and try to get some sleep. But after dinner, we returned to the hotel and we were about to head to bed. Bob called and said Mom had taken a turn for the worse and that we needed to get there. Mom had signed a DNR, but somehow was being kept alive by life support. We knew she didn't want that, and the doctor explained to us how bad her situation was and that she wasn't going to get better. His advice to us, which will forever be in our minds, was that if his mom were lying there, he would take her off life support. My mom was in constant pain with no relief, even with medication. We decided together to honor her wishes. It was one of the hardest decisions we've ever made. Once the doctor left, with Bob on one side of the bed and me and Melanie on the other side, we all took hold of my mom's hands. My left hand was on her cheek, and we told her how much we loved her and what a good mama she was. Within just a few minutes, she slipped quietly into eternity. At that moment, a tear came out of one of her closed eyes and rolled over my hand. Time stopped, and she took her last breath. Nothing can prepare you for these moments. Nothing. Now what? For the first time in my life, I didn't have either one of my parents. But what I did have are the things they taught me along life's journey. The hardest days for me since losing my parents are the traditional family gathering holidays, Mother's Day and Father's Day, and even though I can't contact them on those days, in my heart, we still have a good visit. Now, the ultimate life lesson. Here is the ultimate life lesson. Brother Keith Wigginton Sr. always said, 10 out of 10 people die. So I ask you, what legacy teachings are you leaving behind for those who remain? What life lessons do you give that are so strong that your loved ones will not only be guided through the valleys, but will also feel your hand on their shoulder, hear your voice in their ear, and your enthusiasm in their hearts as life goes on? After your last breath, what will remain? Decide right now that you will leave a positive legacy. Decide that you will choose to get better, not bitter, And always remember, the person at the top of the hill didn't fall there. It's your move. No regrets.